This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best commentary of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. Fun Thursday show for you guys. Got a couple former Super Bowl champs in the house, Eric Davis and Seth Joyner, plus NBA insider Chris Broussard. We're talking about the drama between Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson and what we can expect from Dak Prescott and the Cowboys this year. Plus, more drama, Doc Rivers versus CP3. I gotta say, I can't believe how bad this went for the Clippers in LA. I mean, a month ago, Doc Rivers said on a TV camera, absolutely Chris Paul's coming back. But what he didn't anticipate was Jerry West coming in. Doc Rivers wanted to give Chris Paul that five-year deal, pay him $40 million when he's 37. Jerry West stepped in and said, not happening. And now Chris Paul said, fine, you're not giving me that fifth year, I'm out of here, see ya. An ugly ending. But I don't think you can just blame Doc. You also have to blame Chris Paul, who I believe got greedy and quit on the team. That's what I think. Let's bring in Cowherd and Whitlock.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why the Knicks wish they could rehire Isaiah Thomas.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why the Cowboys might actually be closer to the Rams than the Super Bowl.
What?
My best take of the day, I think.
Speak what?
For yourself starts now. I got a lot of good ones.
That's your craziest take of the day. I don't know if it's your best one. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by Super Bowl champ Eric Davis and Fox NBA analyst Chris Broussard. Let's start with this week's huge NBA news, the trade of Chris Paul from the Clippers to the Rockets. According to a new report, CP3 wanted out of L.A., because he was unhappy with Doc Rivers, after the coach acquired his own son, Austin, to be CP3's backup. Doc denies there's any truth to the report.
Sad day for the Clippers, man.
Well, I don't know if it's sad or not. We'll find that out.
Listen, I got to ask, you know, there's multiple reports out there. Chris Paul was upset because of he felt favoritism towards Austin. And
no, listen, I wish Chris well. He was a great Clipper.
Right. And there's reports that you turned down a proposed trade to get Carmelo in exchange for your son.
That's not true.
That's not true?
No.
So were you and Chris cordial? Like,
very.
They're saying he left upset.
Can you give me Bay's name?
Michael Eaves.
Yeah, well, there you go.
He can, because, you know, he used to do pregame and postgame.
You just said it.
Last question.
I love that. Can you give me Bay's name? All right, Austin Rivers backed up his dad, tweeting, quote, "These false rumors are comedy. So fictional, it's actually amusing. People will say or do anything to get attention. A lot of clowns out there." All right, Cowherd, do you blame Doc for CP3 leaving the Clippers?
Yeah, I mean, he's somewhat culpable. I think in relationships and divorces, you know, there's always a lot of finger pointing, but communication generally is at the base of problems in divorces. Shaq, Kobe, Phil. I mean, you go back in the communication. The other thing is, if you look at the history of stars, star players in the NBA, at least the NBA culture, they battle with their coaches. Even when times are good, they battle with their coaches. You're talking about stars, they're powerful alpha males. They're hard to get along. Troy Aikman could wear the coaches love Troy. He could wear them out. So I think this is inevitable over time, 5, 6, 7 years, star coach. There's some communication gaps.
See, I don't see it as inevitable in pro sports. I mean, this is the kind of thing I expect in little league and high school sports. I played for a wonderful high school football coach, Jerry Stauffer. One great man, great coach. He played his son as our starting middle linebacker as a sophomore, and it nearly ripped apart the entire team. He eventually moved him out his junior and senior year, and we won a state championship. People were upset in high school. If this were going on in professional sports, where I was making my living and making my legacy, Chris Paul's upset in a real way, and Doc needs to be held accountable for that.
Look, I do blame Doc. The Austin thing is just a part of it. That's not it. Doc had created a culture there, and it's a culture where a lot of people there are walking on eggshells, and it's not fun. Doc rules with an iron fist. Assistant coaches can't talk to the media. Some management, you know, didn't want them necessarily talking with the players. He rules with an iron fist, and it wasn't a fun culture to play in. Then on top of that, they weren't playing up to their maximum potential. Like, Doc was brought in to get this team to a championship. Yep. Because when you look on paper, what the Clippers had is better than what Chris is with now. Right now, he's with Eric Gordon and James Harden. He was with Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford. So they weren't getting past the second round. So it's some basketball-related stuff, too. So, Chris, look at what he left to get away from that. He left money on the table. He left security. He could have got 4 or 5 years LA. Max money. What if he gets hurt this in L.A., a city he loved?
Yeah.
What if he gets hurt this year? He risked all of that to get out of there. Who created the culture?
Which is why I don't blame Doc. I blame Golden State and Father Time. He wants to win a championship, and even when he had the better team and the culture that was built there, maybe they were walking on eggshells, but there was a point that they had a better squad than Golden State, and he couldn't beat them.
But what changed? What changed between the Clippers and Golden State?
Well, no.
The coach.
But I get that.
Steve Kerr.
But he's getting older, and he knows if he stays there, he's not going to beat Golden State. So he's trying to go somewhere else and give himself a shot.
That's like blaming a divorce, though, on the neighbor. Like, at some point, you got to take ownership of something.
And he's taking ownership of his
career. They were better when Doc first got there. You're right. They were better than Golden State. They beat Golden State in Doc's first year in the playoffs. The only thing that changed was Steve Kerr took over the Warriors. And he put in a system that took them to a whole nother level. Their talent, I mean, again,
Doc added his son to the mix. Let's don't forget that. Yeah, Golden State added Steve Kerr. Doc added his son, who was bombing out and failing, added him to the team.
He saved Austin's career. Austin might not be in the NBA if it wasn't for Doc.
But I still think if Chris Paul is getting older and he knows this club that they have currently is not going to beat them.
They went in Houston.
If George Seifert had added his son at your position,
I'm not saying he's threatening Chris,
but say your backup was George Seifert's son who couldn't play, it wouldn't bother you?
It's not that many really like skin corners, so I wouldn't. Really
Hey, we taking
saying.
Over basketball again.
I'm just saying.
Football's next, bro. but seriously, Austin now. I think Austin's developed into a legitimately good NFL or NBA rotation player. It's not just the bat. Like, Austin, from what I'm told, has carte blanche within the organization.
Well, and Chris, here's the other thing. When you are coach and become GM, you do create the culture.
Exactly.
It's not
agreed.
Exactly. So if the culture thing is right, that's on Doc.
If you're a NASCAR fan, there's a new podcast for you to subscribe to. Heritage Road, the podcast that drives you down memory lane, takes you under the hood, and gets you behind the wheel of America's favorite racing competition. They talk to the hardworking drivers, crewmen, and fans that made NASCAR possible then and now. From NASCAR royalty Bobby Allison to the broadcasters that brought racing into homes around the country, they've got all the stories you've probably never heard before. Hosted by the voice of Texas Motor Speedway, Rich Phillips. Brought to you by Busch, the beer that has supported racing since 1979. Subscribe to Heritage Road today for free wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's get back to the show.
To yesterday's other big news, the departure of Phil Jackson from the Knicks. Apparently, the team is now considering another blast from the past to run the front office. Former team president Buddy Whitlock, Isaiah Thomas, who according to Frank Isola, good reporter, is a dark horse candidate to take his old job. Isaiah's first tenure with the team wasn't a success. As you see there, he had a losing record, made the playoffs just once, and had 5 coaches in 5 years, including himself. Whitlock, are you surprised that Isaiah is in the running for the job?
First of all, why is he a dark horse? I just want to know that. That's a joke. Listen,
Isaiah Thomas could have this job if he wants it. That's my understanding of the situation. Isaiah Thomas is a better fit as the president of the Detroit Pistons. If Stan Van Gundy continues to struggle in Detroit, don't be surprised if Isaiah Thomas doesn't reemerge as a candidate in Detroit as president or whatever role with the Pistons in a year or two if Stan Van Gundy continues to struggle. I don't think the Knicks is the right fit for Isaiah. I think if he wanted it, he could have it. I think that's why someone's whispering, is he a dark horse? Will Isaiah throw his hat into the ring late? I don't think so.
I wouldn't take it if I was Isaiah, because you're never going to get a fair chance. When you're coming, right, I mean, he struggled. There's chaos with Phil. There's a part of that New York media that's anti-Knicks and anti-James Dolan, and they're not letting up. Mm-hmm. So even if you knocked it out of the park, and your next two picks were home runs, and you got rid of the Joe Kim Noah contract, you pulled a Magic Mozgov, who's giving him a fair shot? I mean, I'm sorry, but James Dolan is under attack from the New York media for good reason.
Well, we mentioned culture earlier, talking about Doc, and that's the problem in New York. The culture around the Knicks is horrible. And, I mean, look at the legends, Lenny Wilkins, Larry Brown, Isaiah Thomas, Phil Jackson. They've all failed there. I think Masai Ujiri from Toronto should be the hire. That's a more traditional hire. It's a guy that's a grinder, that's done the front office work for years, versus a celebrity hire. Now, Isaiah, he did a better job in New York than people thought.
Much better.
You know, ESPN.com did a story in 2014. They found out, based on the analytics, Isaiah Thomas was the best draft day GM or executive in NBA in the last 25 years in the NBA.
He drafted
Marcus Camby, Tracy McGrady, Damon Stoudemire in Toronto, David Lee, Nate Robinson, Wilson Chandler in New York. Like, he's drafted well. And he brought in good talent. You can't blame him for hiring Lenny Wilkins and Larry Brown.
But this is why I said earlier in
the
week.
It was the culture,
though. This is a James Dolan thing. You can't keep telling me all these smart guys come in and fail. It doesn't work that way.
Which is why there's too much baggage. Because you are talking about, it's just too much baggage. That's why I'm shocked that his name is even mentioned with it. Because I don't see him wanting to do it as well. Because he had an opportunity to do it before. Other ownership, he had an opportunity to do it before. And it's perceived. You're pointing out how it wasn't as bad as everyone thought. But it's perceived.
It's perceived
as horrible, and it's going to be very difficult for him. You look at what's on the books, where they are, the state of the organization right now, for him to come in and change anything. I don't know why he would want to do that. I don't know why he would want to step back and put himself in that situation again, even though it's the Knicks in New York.
The hope of redemption? I mean, sir, would that, because this has,
he's not bad
this
either.
Is tainted. Yeah, this is tainted Isaiah's record. I mean, Isaiah Thomas was one of the greatest players ever.
Ever, yes.
Yeah, so the human being.
But why we recognize that to some degree, but people always think of his executive
But it does feel like high-profile Isaiah, high-profile Phil. Yeah. It does feel like it's time for a grinder.
Yeah.
It's just time for a R.C. Buford that I don't even, couldn't, you know, if it walked by me, I wouldn't know who he is.
One of the great points you made the past couple of days about Dolan, even if you go analyze what happened to Isaiah in New York, if you go read the stories and what actually happened, Anuka Brown-Saunders was ready. This is the woman that alleged sexual harassment, whatever. She was ready to settle. James Dolan wouldn't settle. They could have settled this for a few hundred thousand dollars, and there never would have been the controversy. But Dolan is such a fighter, he just refused. And ended up costing himself $11 million. Isaiah, his reputation, James Dolan, his reputation. And so, yeah, this is a tough job for whoever, because you're signing up to deal with James Dolan's strategy and his not willingness to ever back down or compromise and his ongoing war with the New York media. And these guys are never going to be fair to James Dolan. And so that means they'll never be fair to whoever he hires.
Welcome back. Eric Davis is back now, joined by Super Bowl champ, our friend Seth Joyner. Let's talk to the NFL about it. Richard Sherman, who's been at the center of the Seahawks offseason. He's full of drama this year. Sherman has now decided to address a recent ESPN report about the alleged feud between the Seahawks defense and the Seahawks quarterback, Russell Wilson, saying the report is, quote, just a made-up story. Because you could literally say that about any team, any quarterback. You could say, well, the Patriots probably think Tom Brady gets treated better than everybody else. That'd be a story. Whitlock, is the Seahawks locker room drama perhaps overblown?
No, not in my opinion, but, you know, Eric and Seth are going to laugh at me. I don't think it is. I think when you have Russell Wilson's resume and the injuries he played through, the toughness he's shown, I don't think these defensive players should be running their mouths as much as they have been, taking a little shot. There's always, oh, he ain't black enough. And then it was, he's not tough enough, or we need to have Colin Kaepernick in here as the backup. Or I just think it's not overblown. There's a problem in that locker room, and they need to deal with it.
You ever go to the grocery store? And if you look to the left at my grocery store, they got the Globe and the National Enquirer. I like the Globe. There's always an alien going to the White House.
Always, always.
That's not real accurate. But the National Enquirer, a lot of times, is accurate. And Brad and Angelina, for 3 years, I'd go by that grocery store. Trouble. Then all of a sudden, they got divorced. How many stories do I have to read on the Seahawks locker room, and I'm supposed to go, oh, yeah, this isn't alien in the White House. I can buy some of this stuff. I've seen Sherman yelling at coaches.
Well, Trump is in the White House, so the Globe got something right.
I mean, some of this. How many stories I got to read?
A whole lot more. Sherman is right. First of all, this is completely overblown. I've said it from the start that this wasn't a story. Guys, when you have expectations of winning championships, when you have a culture that has allowed these guys to do what they do, it's a defensive system there. It's a defensive team, defensive-led team there. Those guys play at a certain level, and they have been at a very high level throughout this last 5-6 years, and it's okay for you to point across the field and say, guys, pick it up. That's normal. That happens when you have a defensive.
Look at that, though. No, that's intense.
Okay, it may be intense, but it's okay and it's normal. And then the other thing, like I said, just talk to the guys. If you talk to the players in the locker room, and I talk to the players in the locker room, there's not an issue.
In their mind.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. Okay, and anytime that you have a defensive-centric team, like I said last time I was here and we talked about this, you're going to have these problems. You are going to have these problems. Now, I don't think it's as overblown as people are making it out to be, but when you have 53 different guys on a football team, somebody on that team is not going to like somebody else on that team.
Of course.
That is factual. Okay, and sometimes it's the quarterback. You know, I played on a team with Randall Cunningham. There were some things that would come out of his mouth that made me want to just choke him. You know, but you want to know something? Come Sunday, he had on the same uniform I had. And if I had to run out there and defend him, if somebody cheap shot at him, you can best believe I take that 15-yarder and I take the fine to go along with it. But there are some guys in that locker room that don't get along. And Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson might not get along. They might not get along, but you don't want to know something. They got to show up on Sunday and fight the same battle because they're all on the same team.
But there's a way. If Jason and I disagreed and we were taped, it'd be respectful. Some of this video is not very respectful. I mean,
There's a different way of communicating. It's a different way of communicating in the locker room. And as Seth just said, there are 53 different guys that you have to learn to communicate with. And there are some guys I may be able to sit next to you and say, would you please not touch my cup of water? And you're okay with it. There are other guys I got to drop F-bombs all over the place. If I say, don't do that, they'll continue. But if I start dropping the F-bombs, now it's not that they're upset. That's the way I have to communicate with them, and then we move on and they stop doing it.
There are some guys that I don't even have to communicate with. That's just the way that it is in the NFL locker room. There's some guys I don't have to communicate with, you know. And at the end of the day, there's some guys that you're just not going to like. There's been plenty of teammates that I had that, you know what, I just didn't like.
Let me spin it a different way then, though. And Tom Brady's resume protects him in a way. But so let's take Tom Brady out of it. Let's go to Aaron Rodgers. He's got one Super Bowl. Russell Wilson has one Super Bowl. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is facing the same level of criticism, scrutiny within his locker room as Russell Wilson?
Hold on. Absolutely not.
I'm going to go to a different spot because that's an offensive team. Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Flacco. They used to call out Flacco. Wait, hold on. They used to call out Flacco. And he's got his Super Bowl win, okay? Yep. They used to call out Flacco. They used to tell him that he needed to pick it up. Yeah. They would say it in the press.
Yeah,
but it was okay. And it wasn't about him not being black enough or white enough or anything. It's because there was a standard set with that defense and the other guys have to do
Flacco
it.
Flacco and Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson hasn't earned more respect
than Flacco. Russell Wilson is way better than Flacco.
Okay, but we're talking about we were talking about a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Dynamic of a team. They, make that, a good
point. And they wanted him to pick it up. Because it was a defensive-led team. It's the exact same thing. And we didn't all of a sudden with that say, they don't like this guy. He's being disrespected. No, you knew that those guys defensively had earned the right to say so. And that's the same thing in Seattle. Sherm has earned the right to tell guys to play at a certain
Ray
level.
Lewis, but I hear what you're saying. All right, to another offseason controversy, Colin Kaepernick's continued unemployment. Now his old coach, Chip Kelly, has spoken out saying that despite what the media says, Kaepernick was never a distraction for the 49ers last year, explaining at the beginning of the year he made a stance in terms of what he believes is right. We recognized and supported his ability to do that, but he never brought that into the locker room. He came to work every day extremely diligent in terms of his preparation, in terms of his work ethic in the weight room, in terms of his work ethic in the meeting room. All right, Calhurt, does this prove Kaepernick is being treated unfairly?
No, because I don't trust anything football coaches say. Harbaugh, Chip Kelly, Bill Belichick, football coaches all have PhDs in covert operations. There's a playbook. You ask Greg Popovich something, he'll scream. He'll give you real emotions. NBA coaches are raw. Baseball managers, Buck Showalter. Football coaches, they're hiding everything. My injuries, my plays, my emotions. You know, I could argue that Chip Kelly and Kaepernick have a similar situation, looking for some redemption. So Cap's not going to blast coaches. Chip's not going to blast Cap. I mean, what if Chip Kelly goes out and says, couldn't get along with him? People are like, well, Chip Kelly, he can't get along with anybody. So football coaches, I always just kind of take everything with a grain of salt.
It's a no-win situation for coaches right now. If you criticize Cap, you're opening yourself up to be called every name in the book by people in the media, by people over social media. So, again, Chip Kelly may be being 100% accurate here, but it just carries no weight because it's the only thing he can say in his situation.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of nice things that he said in that piece. And if you read the rest of it, there's a lot more nice things that he said about Colin Kaepernick. He doesn't have to do that. You don't have to say nice things about someone. You can just say, hey, he showed up to work, did his job, did everything we asked him to do, leave it at that. But he just went on and on and on and on and on. Now,
no job, John, he has nothing else
John,
to do.
John Lynch, I read an article earlier this week where he came out about the leaks that were coming out of San Francisco's organization about Colin Kaepernick. And he apologized to Cap about that. Things of that nature. Listen, if we're going to sit here and say where there's smoke, there's fire, then where there really is no smoke, there really is no fire at the other end of the spectrum. So everyone talking about Cap not being a consummate professional and not doing this and not doing that, these guys don't have to come out at his defense, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. All they got to do is just say, hey, the guy showed up and did his job. So that you got to look at it from both ends of the spectrum, too.
The eye test tells that he's been treated unfairly. It has nothing to do with what Chip Kelly is saying. No, I'm just saying you just look at the guys that are being hired. The guys that are being hired at the backup quarterback position as opposed to Colin Kaepernick. I've sat here and I've talked about it and given you my views on this, so I don't even need to go on that aspect of the players.
John.
But no, this is not about that. What Chip Kelly is doing and what Chip Kelly is saying, it's irrelevant. And I'll tell you why, because he's talking about what happened when he was there and how he was not a distraction. Colin is not going to be the distraction. The media is going to be the distraction. And that's what I liking this to the Ray Carew thing. And everybody was like, how can you put his stance to Ray Carew? And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. What I'm talking about is the media coverage of it. When you go to work every day and you are being asked about it. That's the difference right now. This is not going to be Cap. The guys that play with Cap, the other 60-something guys in that room are going to have to ask questions. And there's never been a player like Cap in this league. There's never been anything like this. Not T.O., not Tebow, no one like this. Why? Because you're going to have to pick a side. No one was going to get upset if you said you weren't religious and Tebow can do his thing. But when they ask you about Cap, you're going to have to give an answer. And you're going to either have to be with him or against him. And if you're with him, now you are anti-police, you're anti-flag, you're anti-military in a lot of people's eyes.
There's a solution, though. we talked about distractions last time I was with you, Colin. And I said, I don't believe in distractions. You hear coaches, you hear the media, you hear everybody talk about distractions. Oh, he's going to be a distraction. You are paid to do a job. You're paid to prepare during the week mm-hmm. and show up on Sunday. Okay? So how do you head this off if an organization decides to sign him? Okay? Come in day one. Everybody talk about it. Cap talk about it. Put it to rest. So when you come to my locker and you ask me any question about Colin Kaepernick, it better be football related, because if it has anything to do with anything else, next question. That way you put the distractions to rest. But I don't believe in distractions. I think distractions are nothing more than scapegoats by coaches who don't get it done and players who don't get it done. And the media is just a great excuse, because you are hired to play football. Do your job.
Yeah, well, you can't. And that's I get what you're saying about do your job. But, Seth, you are going to be asked every time something happens.
Next question.
Every single day.
Next question.
Every single day, and that right there in itself becomes a distraction.
No, it's not a distraction. Because
you want to go there and do your job.
It's a next question, and if you ask me again, the interview is over.
Okay.
I fulfill my requirement to meet with the media, and we're talking football. And if all you want to talk about is Cap, I'm going to the shower. See you later. See you tomorrow.
And that sounds real easy, but it happens every single day.
Been there, done that.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I talked about when I said that distraction of the media when that case was going on.
All right, welcome back. Eric Davis and Seth Joyner are back. Let's move to last year's best, rookie Dak Prescott, who is facing sky-high expectations after an incredible first year. But Dak isn't shying away from the pressure, saying that his stats and accomplishments, quote, mean nothing if you don't have a championship. All right, Cal Herd, do you expect Dak and the Cowboys to build off last year's dominance?
I expect him to build, and I think he's going to be a nice franchise quarterback. But that, outside of New England, take New England out of it. Who in this league says, we had a great year last year, and duplicates it? The Giants don't. The Steelers don't. The Eagles don't. The Ravens don't. And these are good organizations. Atlanta doesn't. Outside of New England. You have an injury component in this league that only baseball rivals. I mean, Carolina's great, bad, and now Vegas thinks they'll win 10 games this year. That division's up, down, up, down. Listen, I like them, but they play a first-place schedule. They don't have a pass rusher. Sean Lee was even healthy last year. He gets hurt constantly. They got some breaks last year.
They still have the best offensive line in football.
They do.
That shows up time after time after time. Even you go back to the great triplets, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman. It was the offensive line, to me, that made them great.
They had a defense, too, that gave them the ball quite a bit.
And the best coach in the game.
They had a really good defense.
In this particular league, the way it's set up now, if you have a great offense, you can figure out a way to survive.
Giants and Philly play the Cowboys tough. That Philly team played them tough last year.
They should have won the first game.
So, I mean, to me, they're the Rams division right now. Niners are rebuilding.
If WC kicks that field goal instead of punting the ball, they win the game.
What do you think Dallas is next year?
Listen, man, Dallas, the problem with Dallas is going to be a great offensive team. They just have all the pieces that are there, okay? And the problem with them is going to be, it's twofold. How do you stop this guy? You know, because if you put your focus, all your attention on stopping Ezekiel Elliott, then you have a chance of controlling this offense. But when he's running wild, that opens up the entire playbook, and that's problematic, you know, for defenses. Their Achilles heel is their offense, and you can hide defense. And you can hide the defense during the regular season. But as you saw, they got the bye, they came out, and the defense showed who they were. See, once you get into the playoffs, you can't hide your weaknesses, because the defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators are hired to figure out what your weaknesses are and expose them. Take away what they do best and make them beat you with their weaknesses. And as long as that defense is a weakness, they're going to have problems. They're going to be okay during the regular season. They may even dominate through the regular season. But when they get to the playoffs, their lack of efficiency on the defensive side of the ball is what's going to kill them every single time.
I think the offense will expand. I think you can get more out of Dak because he left a lot on the field last year if you look at the film. And he should have. He was a rookie. He's learning. I'm with Witt on the fact that that offensive line and the running game that they have, it gives them an opportunity to control a lot of things, do a lot of things. So I think they will get better. Because remember, Jerry Jones put this together before. I know you were Jimmy Johnson. He was there when Jimmy Johnson put it together with that offensive line that we all had to run into. You know, you had Emmett running the ball. You had Troy, who could have thrown the ball for 300 yards a game, but he didn't because they didn't want to try to turn it over. They played ball control, and they had a solid defense. The defense has to pick it up some. Do I think the league and their division is going to catch up to them? Yes, I do. I personally think the Giants are going to win the division. I think the Cowboys will be a playoff team. You're not crazy that there are going to be other teams like the Rams or possibly the 49ers that will be one or two games away from these guys.
I could make an argument.
Hold it. I thought your Rams thing was crazy. This man just threw the 49ers into the
conversation. I'll tell you why. No, I'll tell you what. No, I said
I want both of you drug tested.
I said the Rams. And he and I had this conversation
Jared
before.
Goff is the quarterback in L.A., yeah,
but
Colin.
Look, but yeah, look
Jeff, quarterback Jeff, league. Look, it's
Jeff
a quarterback
Fisher,
league.
Jeff Fisher, the offensive staff for the Rams, was the worst side of the ball staff in this
the
league.
The man don't even know where the sun rises and sets, but you're going to bet on Jared Goff.
But if the Niners sweep the Rams or vice versa, you look at the way their division's set up and the schedule set up, those teams have a chance to win nine
Look at Dallas'
games.
Schedule. Philly plays them tough.
One
New York
teams.
Plays them tough. Washington's viable. They play Green Bay. They also play the AFC West, Denver, Kansas City, Chargers.
I say San Francisco, no shot. The thing that the Rams have on their side, the thing that the Rams have is they got a defense.
Defense, yes.
You know, that if orchestrated the right way, they can dominate a football game. Okay, on the offensive side of the ball, they have a running back who fell asleep last year after a heck of a rookie year, and they got some pieces around him. So really all Goff's got to do is just hand it off. If he hands it off and they can move the ball and then play action comes alive, now all of a sudden he becomes the Trent. He can become Trent Dilfer-ish.
Okay, they won four games last year and could not move the ball.
Yeah.
They won four games, couldn't move the ball, coach fired, worst O-line arguably in the league, and almost won three more games. So if they're just elevated on the coaching side of offense, that's a 7-win team.
Great horseshoe team. Great grenades team. All that's got to be is close.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best commentary of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. Quick thought on the Cowboys. Boy, Cowherd coming down really hard. I mean, this is a team that returns, I believe, 10 of 11 starters on offense. They're all, with the exception of maybe tight end Jason Witten, under the age of 30, and all of a sudden they're going to dip under 10 wins? Colin, I know there's been some issues on the defense. They didn't have a good defense last year. At a minimum, the Cowboys sleepwalk and win 11 games. They're going to the playoffs, I think the Super Bowl. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are back tomorrow. Find us on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud. See you tomorrow.